What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
We now have good reason to predict that deep global liquid water oceans exist beyond Earth. Think about that. Think about the role of our ocean here on Earth in our biosphere. Now imagine an ocean that's 10 times as deep as ours and global, covered in ice, potentially with hydrothermal vents and all sorts of interesting chemistry occurring in it. Could it be inhabited? Could there be life, microbial or even larger, swimming around in that ocean today?
Where there's water, there's usually life. To find out if life might exist at the edges of our solar system, we first have to get there, and then somehow access the deep hidden waters of these foreign worlds. That's where robots and other technologies come in.
When we design these robotic vehicles to go down to the surface, sample the surface, and ultimately drill or melt through the ice shell itself, we need to understand what that kind of upper region of Europa's ice looks like, feels like, and how it behaves.
Europa is one of Jupiter's moons. Planetary scientists think it could have a massive ocean beneath its frozen crust.
And what's really cool about it is that on the outside of that moon, it has about 15 to 30 kilometer ice shell overlaying a 100 kilometer ocean. When we look at Europa, we can see evidence of cracks along the surface. We can see salt deposits. And these things we think reflect the chemistry of the ocean below.
To prepare for such a harsh environment, scientists are training in a place not so far from home, but every bit as alien, Antarctica. From the Wall Street Journal, this is the future of everything. I'm Anthony Green. Antarctica is the coldest and least habitable place on Earth. The Wall Street Journal's Daniela Hernandez traveled there to meet a robotics team led by Brittany Schmidt from the Georgia Institute of Technology.
You have to be on your toes about almost everything. And so it's actually kind of a constant battle to keep on top of what's happening. The environment itself can change very quickly. The internet is slow or non-existent. Phones don't really work down here. You know, there's not the normal creature comforts, even the ability to really kind of escape from that. So it changes the way that you operate as a person. And so you're monitoring all of those things in addition to, you know, highly detailed robotics.
Brittany's group is prototyping technologies that could one day help us probe distant planets and moons for signs of life. We drove out on snowmobiles to a section of sea ice flanked by a glacier on one side and a massive iceberg on the other.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You're welcome. It's pretty beautiful out here.
That glacier is
It's mind-blowing. It's so beautiful, and it's this whole thing, right? It's this side and the other side, so we're going to kind of go around and try to figure out if any of it's floating or if the whole thing is grounded, which means it's laying on the seafloor, and then maybe do some fun check out of the iceberg, because we haven't done that yet. But I've wanted to work out here since 2012, and it's just the right time to be able to take the vehicle out there. It's performing really well. We've got a few days left of not too many cracks in the ice.
Too many cracks in the ice make it dangerous for them to work in the field.
Our main science questions here is how does the ocean affect the ice and vice versa? It's not very well known, even here on the Earth. And then when we move to places like Jupiter's moon Europa, we don't really know how that whole thing will operate. And so by asking these questions here, we get really good at measuring them and thinking about the processes.
To do that, her team is testing an underwater robot called IceFin. The 12-foot machine is bright yellow and looks like a torpedo.
IceFin is a hybrid autonomous and remotely operated underwater vehicle, or an HROV. And what it's basically doing is measuring the properties of the water column, the ice, and the seafloor, and searching for biological communities as well. This one is also a platform for testing sensors and technology and science questions for future exploration of other planets. Predominantly, we're interested in the icy moons of Jupiter and Saturn. In this case, Europa is our primary target.
So the grand scheme of the project is to develop this vehicle as something that we would want to send to Europa and look for life there. So we basically have as small of a vehicle as possible with as much scientific instrumentation on it as we possibly can. I'm Chad Ramey. I'm a grad student at the Georgia Institute of Technology, and I write software for ICEFIN. While we're here in Antarctica, this is the closest analog we have to Europa, but we're interested in ice science. So how is ice forming and melting, and what does the chemistry of the water look like, and how many dissolved organic matter are in the water? What are the oxygen levels? So we'll be putting the robot in the water for 3 deployments today. We're really interested in the grounding line, so where the glacier actually departs from the ground and starts floating on the water. And then also we have this massive iceberg that we're going to drive the robot up to and have a look at, because icebergs are awesome.
The grounding line is important because it can impact how stable a glacier is. It's one of the places melting occurs.
So when are you guys going to launch?
So right now we're getting ready for our first full systems test. We'll go through each of our sensors, make sure they're all operating. We'll make sure all of our thrusters are good, and then we'll be ready to go. And we all like to have some pizza beforehand, though.
As they're getting ready to put ICEFIN in the water through a small hole in the ice, it's hoisted vertical on a stand and attached to a tether.
Okay, let me know when I can give you the coordinates. Fire when ready. Best 77.60386 degrees. And east 166.30296 degrees. And you can repeat those back to me whenever you're ready.
For dive one, we have Andy doing dive light, Brittany is float and science, Chad is pilot, Dan is operating the winch, Francis is on the tether, and Justin is the co-pilot.
All right, friends, welcome to Barn Glacier 18. This is dive number 015, dive 15. As usual, our mission goals are first CT cast to the seafloor. We don't know exactly how deep the ice is here or whether it's grounded at the toe. So that's what we're checking for. All right, any questions? Other than that, we're ready for startup.
Yep, okay. Go.
Power systems are nominal, proceeding to phase one checkout. Powering the rim thruster control board.
Ready
for a rim checkout.
This will be a Z-axis first. Now.
Yep.
You're good.
All right, and with that, we're just about ready to go.
All right.
Let's put it in the water.
Inside a tent, the team set up a temporary control room. From there, they drive ICEFIN with a video game controller. Through its cameras, they could see what it finds underneath the sea ice.
And then as I drive forward, I'll try and pull a little bit closer to the glacier, and then...
Are you at the glacier already?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That image over there is amazing.
Yeah, so that's the down cam. So what you can see on this forward-looking sonar here, you can see that strong, this kind of strong line.
Yeah.
Like so on the right-hand side, that's the wall of the glacier cutting up. And then the fainter one that's just to the left of that, we're traveling over a foot made of ice.
Okay.
And so that's kind of probably the old face position of the glacier, and it's been melted back.
The experiment lasted a few hours. By the time they pulled ICEFIN out of the water, the weather had turned windy and cold.
It is chilly out here. That's the wind coming right off the ocean for you. Woohoo!
Antarctic expeditions like the ICEFIN project give researchers the chance to figure out the measurements they might need to find life in previously uncharted territory. But even Antarctica's frigid climate is only a distant cousin to Europa's.
Imagine approaching Europa and you look out the window and you see Jupiter, and off to the side you see Io with volcanoes erupting, and then you see the ice of Europa coming towards you and it's fracturing, and maybe there are some plumes jetting up and out into space. And then you land and you dig and potentially find not just microbes, but maybe even some more complex life forms. My name is Kevin Peter Hand. I am an astrobiologist and planetary scientist at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Kevin works on a project called Europa Clipper. It's a spacecraft that will survey Europa from orbit and be able to tell scientists more about the moon's ice and potential for life. Kevin has been interested in space since he was a kid.
I grew up in a small town in the countryside of Vermont where the night sky was just super clear and the stars were beautiful. And at a very young age, my curiosity was just captured by the stars. And for the first time in the history of humanity, we have the tools and technology, the capability to go out there and explore and potentially make this great discovery.
To get a sense of what technology it takes to study an environment nearly 400 million miles away, we traveled to Pasadena, California, home to JPL.
It looks like a workshop in here.
Hey!
Hello!
How's it going?
Hi, Kevin. Nice to meet you. Daniela. Daniela Hernandez. This is Anthony Green.
Pleasure to meet you. Let me just write something down and then...
Wouldn't want to disturb science.
Excellent. Much appreciated. Okay.
What were you in the middle of doing?
Just going through an old logbook of data, trying to take a look at some old samples.
Samples of what?
Samples of salts that we've examined in the lab and that we think could be on the surface of Europa. Part of what we do in our lab is look at stuff under environments that are comparable to these ice-covered ocean worlds of the outer solar system and see if the data that we collect matches the data collected by spacecraft and telescopes.
So are they kind of like little replica simulations of what you expect to see elsewhere?
That's right. So you're standing in a room that arguably recreates Europa on planet Earth as best as you possibly can. So welcome to the surface of Europa. How's it look?
It looks very mechanical. I would expect it to be a little icier, maybe a little grittier. It looks very clean.
A lot of metal, a lot of pumps, a lot of computers and various devices.
What are these tanks and tubes and pipes?
Let's start over here. This sound that you're hearing right down here, that's the sound of space. At least when it comes to making space in the lab. That's a pump. And what that pump is doing is pumping out this vacuum chamber. When we think about recreating the surface of worlds like Europa, there are two main physical parameters that we want to recreate. The vacuum of space. Europa doesn't have an atmosphere. It's essentially space vacuum. And then the temperature of Europa is about 100 Kelvin, which is about minus 280 degrees Fahrenheit. Liquid nitrogen and some of the cryostats that we have get us down to those temperatures. Now, there's one other key ingredient in recreating the surface of Europa, and that's done by this thing up here. This is an electron gun. And the reason that we have this electron gun mounted onto our chamber is that the surface of Europa is bombarded by electrons and ions and protons that are entrained within Jupiter's magnetic field. And so if you were sitting on the surface of Europa, not only would you die because it's too cold, there's no air, etc., but you get bombarded by a lot of radiation. This is our Europa in a can, and we can collect data on Earth that we can then compare to data that we collect from robotic spacecraft missions. And then we can also use this data to feed forward into future missions.
We head to another part of the lab where Europa's surface is simulated with devices that look like industrial rice cookers, but instead they make ice.
Inside of these, and right now we've got an experiment running, is ice that is under vacuum, but not as extreme of a vacuum as in the chambers next door. And then we've got light up above it going through that window, and that light is simulating sunlight. And we're looking at how the shape of the ice changes as a function of temperature and pressure. And so with the Europa in a can experiments, we're recreating Europa at the micron scale. It's very, very tiny ices.
The clicks you hear are valves for the cooling system needed to produce Europa in ice.
In this part of the lab, we recreate Europa at the sort of centimeter, almost meter scale. So we've got these two stockpots for some prototype, quick and dirty experiments. We can run these pretty easily. And then over here, we've got this massive bathtub size chamber that we call the Ark. And you can see the Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones thing on the front. And that's because it looks like the Ark from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Inside there, we have ice that is under Europa temperature and pressure. And we've got a beam of lights that goes back and forth to simulate the sunrise and the sunset, and we can examine how sunlight affects the shape of the surface. When we design these robotic vehicles to go down to the surface, sample the surface, and ultimately drill or melt through the ice shell itself, we need to understand what that kind of upper region of Europa's ice looks like, feels like, and how it behaves. So that's what the ARC is for.
So when I was down in Antarctica at Barn Glacier with Brittany Schmidt, one of the things that she told us was that it was really important to understand how the ice changed when it was next to water, next to other ice, next to land. And that was one of the things that her robots were helping her to understand. It sounds like you're doing similar things here, but in a contained environment.
Right. So Antarctica, as cold and as extreme an environment as that is, we humans can still get dressed up and go there. The surface of Europa, much, much colder. And the ice, as a result of the low pressure and low temperature, the ice near the surface of Europa is much different physically in terms of how it fractures and the features that form on it than anything that we find on the surface of Antarctica. Now, when you get into the ice shelves and the ice sheet of Antarctica, now you're a little bit closer to what the ice might actually be like deeper within the ice shell of Europa. But there's no place on Earth where you can travel to and see snow or ice that would be directly comparable to the surface of Europa. Too darn cold, pressure's too low, so we have to recreate it in the lab.
Kevin's scientific adventure in space will happen when Europa Clipper launches in the 2020s.
And it will go out to Europa and fly by Europa and collect a tremendous amount of incredibly useful data. And that data will also help us look for places to land and eventually get into the ocean itself.
Landing on Europa will require a different robot. It hasn't been built yet, but scientists are already thinking about what it might look like. To get a glimpse of the future, we're headed to the Flight Projects building. On the way, we pass an obstacle course for robots.
On any given day, you'll see a smattering of robots, kind of like horses, you know, taken out of the barn and jogged around. You'll see a little robot wheeling or crawling around or up a wall or something. That's a test bed for an Enceladus mobility robot. Should we keep going?
Yeah.
This requires a badge.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so this is the Europa lander.
The robot is meant to one day explore Europa's surface. The mock-up looks like a giant metal insect sitting on jagged terrain.
NASA has committed to the Europa Clipper mission that'll fly by Europa, but we have no commitment yet to actually land on the surface. So what you're seeing is a dream.
A lander would get them one step closer to figuring out whether Europa hosts life.
And then this is a big vault. Inside this vault would be all of the instruments that would process the sample. Now, what you don't see on the side here is a robotic arm. And that robotic arm would grab a sample, it would saw into the surface, and then it would deliver that sample to the vault where instruments would then analyze it and look for large organic molecules, small organic molecules, minerals, and even morphologies, shape, that look like signs of life.
Why do you think we're so enamored or enthralled by the potential of finding life beyond our own planet?
It's just so intrinsic. We are searching for the stuff that is us. We are biology, and we don't yet know if biology works beyond our home planet. Who knows if life exists, but if it's out there, I'm certain that it's beyond beautiful.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was reported and produced by Daniela Hernandez, with help from Alexander Hotz, Lee Camping Carter, and Natalia Osipova. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. Thanks for listening. I'm Anthony Green.
I feel like I left my pizza somewhere, but I also can't find it. I apologize in advance if I didn't finish my pizza, but I think I did. But anyway, it's a mystery, never to be solved.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.